Welcome to this workshop on teaching social graces. We will try to discuss some things that we ought to teach our children, our students. There will be some more handouts coming. This has been a popular workshop, and so therefore we ran out of handouts. I knew we were getting close, but I thought, well, we'll probably have about enough for today, and then I'll make sure to copy some for Wednesday. So I think there's about four or five of you, maybe not quite that many, that don't have handouts. So they'll be coming very shortly. So we want to discuss what are some things that help us pour oil on relationships, some things that help with relationships, some things that help behavior, some manners that are acceptable and not acceptable. And you know, all those things change from culture to culture. There are some things in some cultures you need to be aware of. They might catch you by surprise. The other day we were at a Russian Mennonite home for breakfast. And we had prayer, common prayer before breakfast. We almost forgot, though, that he had told us they always had prayer after. And Anthony made a comment that I guess he should get going. And we were almost ready to get up to the table and just like that, the whole thing bowed their heads. No comment, you know, no warning. No. It's good we had a forewarning. Another thing with their culture was this. Never did one person pray in public on himself, but the whole group prayed audibly, I think five times that day. But before lunch, they stood and they prayed a prayer in German. Of course, Anthony and I couldn't understand a word they prayed. So they all stood and had this lunchtime prayer audibly together. But then, when we sat down to eat, we had a silent prayer. It was the second prayer for lunch. And then after we're done praying, there was a time for another silent prayer. Just raise your hand if you need a handout. So those things are things in cultures. And is it wrong for us to do something different than someone else or for them to do something different from us? No. Now there are sometimes some cultures and practices that are wrong and sinful. That's why we don't get involved in those, but sometimes we need to just do things that are according to the culture. And we need to train our students and our children to do the same things. And there's a thing about social graces. You have probably all been at the store and have seen children that didn't get their own way. And you know how they act. But have you ever noticed some parents that are trying to control them? And have you ever wondered why the children act the way they do in the store? The mother who tries to stop her child by angry warnings and angry glances and trying to not discipline them correctly. And I wonder, does that mother have any better social grace? So we want to look at this afternoon social graces, which brings us to a whole list of different words and different meanings. What are these things? First of all, thinking about behavior. What is behavior? Behavior is conduct, performance. It's our everyday performance, how we behave, how we put to practice what we know. You have good behavior and bad behavior. And so that is what we judge people by. But then we also have manners. And some of these things can kind of glide right into the next. Because when people have good manners, we often say they have good behavior, but manners don't always equal behavior. Manners are those habitual conduct, those patterns of learned behavior, such as how you tie your shoes. You probably always tie the same shoe first. You probably don't tie the left one time, the right one the next time first. You probably just automatically do those things. Cross your arms and you will probably always cross them the same way. If you cross them the opposite way, it just uses a lot. And those aren't right or wrong manners. But there are some things that are good manners and some things that are not so good manners. Such as talking with our mouth stuffed full of food. That's some of those manners you need to learn. They need to be learned, they need to be taught. And those kind of hinge on social graces. We also have this word courtesy. Courtesy has to do with being friendly, being warm-hearted, being charitable, being polite. And I believe as we put all those together, They kind of all equal social graces, courtesy, manners of behavior, put to work around others is when we have social graces. There's things that are socially acceptable. The socially acceptable way to do things. If you go to a Muslim mosque, it's socially acceptable to take your shoes off. If you come to this church on Sunday, I doubt that most people come in and take their shoes off before they come into the auditorium. It is not socially acceptable. Pete was telling us about the Macedonian brethren, or the Macedonian brothers in northern British Columbia. They had shoe racks inside the door of their church to put their shoes on. And yet, they believe a lot like we do. Now, if you go there, it is socially acceptable for you to fit into their culture. And it probably would be very awkward if you would resist their culture and say, I'm going to wear my shoes to anybody in this church house. So, learning social graces is learning how to work with rules around us. So I believe that our character equals our behavior, our manners, our courtesy, and our social graces all added together. And that produces the kind of character we have. And so as we teach children, and as we are people who go out in society, we want to have character, social graces that basically bloom. That when somebody looks at us in society, they say, those people aren't odd. Yes, we do some things that are culturally odd to the society around us, but we want to be a culture that is a blessing to society, not a obnoxious culture in we don't want to be obnoxious. We want to be socially fitting in, not being total misfits while we are a counterculture. Because we do things that are not according to the culture. And I understand that. But we do want to be socially fitting. We do want to fit in socially. There's a few verses there. I will read them. First, Romans 12:9-10 says, let love be without dissimulation. For that which is evil, cleave to that which is good. Be kindly affectioned one to another with brotherly love, in honor, preferring one another. That's the thing of being kindly affectionate one to another. The thing about referring others, that all has to do with our manners and how we relate to other people. Let no man despise thy youth, but be thou an example of the believers. And I'm going to read only one of those in conversation, in our manner of life. Be an example of Christian people. Teach children that the things that you do in society are going to be an example of what God's people are like. If one of our children is laying on the floor at Walmart and kicking his feet, is he an example of the Christians? Now, of course, depending on their age, they can't understand that. But to our teenagers, this is the society. All the way from another across the road from the story. Or at least we used to. We're slowly moving. But anyway, there are grocery carts in front porch. And one Sunday evening, there were two carloads of young ladies that pulled into the car and into the parking lot. And they got those shopping carts off of the front porch and got in them and were going around the parking lot inside the grocery carts. Now, hopefully, I'm not setting on any of your toes. I don't think they were probably there. I didn't say in front of the story of this community. But they were in these grocery carts and they had flipped the that front piece up around, and they were sitting, they were with their legs sticking out on the back of them, pushing themselves around. All of a sudden, somebody starts coming. I don't remember if they came in the backyard of the store or not, but all of a sudden, just like that, everybody jumped out of the carts. The carts were all put in a pile, not back like they should have been, on the front porch of that store, and those girls slept. That is not a good social picture of what conservative Anabaptist people should be like. Now, hopefully those girls all grew up since then. That was a couple of years ago. But teach children and young people how to fit in the society of what is acceptable and what is not. And by the way, those all belong to Anabaptist churches. Neither do they know the people across the river watching that, I'm sure. If they would have, I doubt they would have done it. They would have known we were over there. looking out the windows at them. Last verse, 1 Peter 3, verses 8 and 9. Finally, be all of one mind, having compassion one to another. Love us, brethren. Be pitiful, be courteous, not rendering evil for evil or railing for railing, but contrarywise, blessing, knowing that ye are thereunto called, that ye should inherit a blessing. So we want to teach compassion, teach the idea of being a blessing to those of us. In a little bit, I'm going to ask you what we shall teach on some different subjects. If you look at the back, at the top of the back of the handout, you'll notice a bunch of areas, and so I'll be looking to you for suggestions, looking to go out to teach in those respective areas. But still back on the first page of the handout, teaching, whose job is it? Whose job is it to teach? I have two question marks there. Homes or schools? Whose job is to teach social graces? The home. And I agree with that. And that is the answer that I usually have gotten in workshops, except I did have one workshop where school came out first. I believe it's the home's job, first of all, as these little children are growing up, to teach them social graces. Now, I do believe that in our communities and in our schools, the school can be a great benefit in impacting children in social graces, because there's some things that at home we don't face. Because in our home we don't often face this thing of having 10 children learning together and needing to learn how to work together. At least not all at the same age. And so you have to, there's some things at school that come out that probably don't always come out at home. You know, the oldest in the child, I mean the oldest child in the family, they often are a little bit bossy. And so those of us that are oldest in the family, we probably had to deal with this. But they like to take charge of oldest children in the family. And yet when they're at school, they have to learn to work with other children of the same age. And you, I thought long enough to see if or not. The oldest child in the family often will try to learn to show on the playground. Just because that's where God placed them in the family, and it actually is a good character trait, except it needs to be trained. And parents don't always see that at home. They probably will see it when they, once they reach teenage years and are trying to be the mother or the father of the younger siblings, but it happens a lot faster, I believe, in school. And school also provides a formal setting where we can, on an everyday basis, work on that character. Well, at home, it's necessary to work on those things as well. Now, there are some things that, in a public setting, things happen that, even with other children, that children can see, oh, we shouldn't really do that. I remember my parents teaching us not to hurt. I don't remember it being a problem at home. But it was at school that I learned that it's not publicly acceptable to burp out loud. And yet it wasn't I that did it, it was a classmate. There was a classmate that was burping, and the teacher informed him that burping is not allowed. You don't burp out loud, and when you do burp out loud accidentally, you need to say, excuse me. And I never learned my lesson at home. But I don't ever remember anyone burping out loud at our home. At least not when I was younger. I had younger siblings that I know had to be working with that. And I believe sometimes learning social graces is a personal initiative, especially for some children and some teenagers. As you work with society, you can see, yes, I shouldn't do this. And so you need to take a personal initiative to train a certain habit into our lives or a certain thing that home and school maybe didn't get taught. So teaching, how should we teach? Well, we must teach by example, first of all. How do the adults that are training the children do? I believe we probably all have things to work on in our lives, but we need to make sure that we are being examples to the children. If we as the adult are going burping out loud, we maybe need to do some things differently. Teachers can have a big effect on children. You can read stories of those who went and taught the Kentucky Hillbillies, the Hillbilly culture of Tennessee, maybe, or maybe in London somewhere. And we find that those teachers often had to work with things that were socially unacceptable. There's a story, Francesca Pinderwalt, I believe it is. She went to, I believe, the mountains of Switzerland and was teaching these people in the mountains. And when she got there, the community had children that had that never had combed their hair. These communities did not comb their hair. But one of the things she did was introduce combs to them. And eventually, those children learned to comb their hair. You know, that'd be strange if somebody would come into your culture and try to teach you something different, something that you never did before. But do remember this as teachers. You can't change culture in a very short time. Little by little. If you see something that needs change in the culture in which you're teaching, don't try to be a culture new ordinary. Lead by example, and then little by little, if you teach 10, 20 years, you probably will be able to change the culture where you are a little bit. But don't plan to be a mover of culture. We can teach by teaching. The Bible talks about line upon line, precept upon precept, and then it's talking about teaching scripture. But if you make application of that to social graces, habits, you can teach as well. Teach while the children are still young. Even before they have understanding. You need to teach them what to do, and they don't always need to know why. Now, when they're teenagers, then it's time to start explaining why sometimes. But the little children need to just learn to do, and then eventually they can learn some answers to the why. You know, I have in the log of the first day I found out a list of things that I saw. I borrowed that list. That's the smallest of things that you can start with young children. Don't give them 100 rules. A little 4-year-old will expect them to remember them all. But you need to work on one thing at a time. Just little things. And as you work on little things, the next little things will come along. And another way to teach is by having good peers. Now, you as a teacher cannot create good peers in all their classmates. But as each family brings in some good character to school, it can help everyone become better. So, what should we teach? One thing that, as you teach, you can use Christopher Dock's 100 Necessary Rules for Children, and then there's a second 100 Christian Rules for Children in the back of the Christopher Dock book that COP says. And those are even interesting just to read to your students. You don't even have to read the whole list. They read pieces of that. Christopher Dock was a teacher who even told his children how to behave in church. He told them how to behave on the way to school and how to behave on the way home from school. Things they should do in the street and things they should do as they meet people. How to eat at their table at home and even how to get dressed at home. You know, he had dressed all those things and then how to teach your students. Can you imagine if I, your teacher, would give you this many rules on how to behave in all of life? Now, I think Christopher Dock had a good way with children, and they probably respected him very well. I don't know how much he changed the culture of the day, but I can imagine that his rules did help a lot of families. Okay, what should we teach? Speech. That which reveals what is on the inside. What should we teach with speech? What are some ways, some things that we ought to teach, either not to do or to do? Some things we have to teach children to use and not to use in their speech. It's open up for you. I do a suck here, but I like to hear what you have to say.
Appropriate volume.
Appropriate volume. That is a very important thing, especially in reading class. It's a good place to teach that. If a visitor is sitting in the back of the room, can they hear your students' stories out of their readers? One way to help them maybe is to set them around the classroom facing out and have them read their stories and see how many of them can hear. Now, if they know what you're doing, they might listen extremely hard so they can hear. I've already had students give me a word to read around the classroom and set them out that way and went around the classroom twice and had them write what words they always read. I had to do it twice so that the word would be repeated. But you know, it's surprising how many times they didn't have the right words. They might have been close, but some of them missed some of the words. And it was just to show them that, look, some of you need to read or speak with more volume. That's a good one. Any others? A good social grace. Anybody can wonder more about some good and bad behavior too. That's fine. Servers. Are they optional? In our schools, in Christian schools? And how close do other words come to servers? What if we use a word that sounds almost like server? Is that okay? What about using other words that aren't servers, but we use them where the world would use a server? Is that okay? We can teach children to be conscientious. So it's going to be too hard on children. Don't be so hard on them on idle words that they're very conscientious to life, but I don't think it'll hurt them. When I was young, we had a man from the Greek Oceans, and he talked about idle words. And you know, he changed my life forever on saying words. There were some words that my parents used to chase cows that I wouldn't even use, because I thought they didn't have any meaning. Now, cows don't understand English, but I came to the point where I believe that cows need to be chased with words that you could understand. Because if you can't understand, aren't they idle words? Now maybe I was probably a little bit overconscious of my words. But you will find there's a lot of words that many Mennonites use today that I won't use just because I, as a young boy, took them out of my vocabulary because I didn't think they were necessary. Anything else? Some of these areas get covered. Some of these things can come up under a couple of these areas. Another one is eye contact. He's showing that they ought to look at the person they're speaking to. But the person that is speaking to them, and that kind of comes under communication as well. Use eye contact. I remember my dad drilling that into me. Look at me, I'm talking to you, or look at me when you speak. And when not to speak, and also when to speak. And there's some children that I like to just always talk about. Me, myself, and I, and they tell lots of stories. Teach them, yes, it's important to tell stories about ourselves. And that is okay, but we also need to learn to be humble about it and not be braggish in our talking. Am I speaking the truth? Should we always speak the truth? Everything that we know that is true, should we speak it? I see some heads shaking. No, of course not. Teach them also to learn to speak only those things which are lovely. So if we hear something about you, it might be true, but should I repeat it to this group of people over here? Well, of course not. Not if it's not. So take them to Philippians chapter 4, verse 8, and show them how to monitor their speech with all those things that Philippians 4, verse 8 tells us to think about. Think on those things which are lovely, of good report. Is it actually a good report about this person? Communication, let's go into that. Our communication is what imparts goodness into the lives of others. It also is partially the same as speech. But I'm thinking here of communication as more than just speech, but letter writing. How do you write letters? Do students know how to write? Do children know how to pass on messages? Can they write letters that do not impart goodness? What are some important things for letter writing? For communication with technology. Today we use technology more than they did 20 years ago. What are some things that children ought to learn? One of those is courtesy. Use courtesy as you write. Do not be demanding. because sometimes your voice inflection cannot carry through emails. Make sure that they sound courteous. Teach students to think about their writing. How does it sound? How will the other people take it? And I think you cannot avoid all misunderstandings in communication. Teach them to be neat, especially with handwritten communication. When I was younger, we had a story about a man who wrote for, late at night, wrote for a pair of pants. He ordered them, mail order, and they were called elegant pants. About a month later, he got what he ordered. The mail lady, or the mailman, brought him elephants. He had written so sloppy that they delivered an elephant to him. Now, of course, the story ended that he enjoyed the elephant, and they were glad they had, he was glad they had escaped. But teach them to write well. What about cell phones? Can we as adults teach children cell phones? And especially teenagers. How should they relate in the world of cell phones? Adults can be a very good example to them of cell phones. What should teachers do with their cell phones? People in not looking at them. Between every class. Should you check yourself in between every class? Is it always necessary to check yourself and make sure that maybe you're just checking the time? Every American, or the average American, looks at their cell phone. Do our children need to learn that? Teach them what is more important. Are people more important than our cell phones? How many times when people sit in groups, do people pull out their cell phones to check them? Or when you're in conversation with somebody, they pull it out. They need to check into those texts. Some of those texts, and they're talking, and they're, or they're supposed to be listening to you, and they're sending a text to someone. Or they're reading an email. Now, who read emails? Teach them that they should never interrupt a live conversation to answer their phone. Which is more important. People we are with are the people that are calling us on our cell phones. Now there isn't a time to answer phones, I do know, when we are with other people. But be careful. And teach children by your example. Another place that cell phones come out is at tables. What happens when you sit down to a table? Just watch how many people set their phone down at the table. Who is more important? The phone or the people at the table? Teaching communication and politeness. Be polite. Say please, thank you, and pardon me. Excuse me. Also say you're welcome. A lady in the workshop the other day gave us incident. She told her son, she said, you need to start saying you're welcome to people. He said, I don't want to. She said, well, why? He said, well, because it means that I'd like to do it again. And I like doing it. So she checked it in the dictionary, and sure enough, the meaning for you're welcome is basically, I'm glad I've done it, and I would enjoy doing it for you again. Now, is it dishonest to teach children? Say you're welcome. No, I don't think so. Even if they really wouldn't love to do this horrible job again, you know, if they pick out the garbage and mom says thank you, and they reply you're welcome, it's just downright polite to answer there. Now what about students always saying thank you? When you hand out papers, is that necessary? You didn't even say thank you when you hand them papers? No. Especially for us teachers. If they would say thank you and you had to say you're welcome for every paper you handed out, it would get monotonous. But they do need to be trained in saying thank you and you're welcome. Excuse me. It should come out of a life that is full of character. That doesn't, and they can be taught that you don't have to say thank you every time. Especially if they're supposed to be quiet in the classroom and the teacher's handing out papers. They can learn that they don't have to say thank you for those because they really don't have permission to talk. Anything else on speech or maybe communication?
you require them to say thank you? Like for a special favor or treats or things like that? How do you require them to force
that? Sometimes it's very hard. One thing you do is, and yeah, some of them, they said, this is not in the suit. They say thank you when they come in the door. But if you require them to say thank you when they come in the door, that's a little hard to require, but sometimes you can just give a piece of candy to everyone that said thank you when they came in the door. It makes the others think about it. Sometimes we've had people that have come in for devotions, and they've done these devotionals where they give out. Well, our bishop just did one that year. He brought this whole wagon load of food in. Okay? Potatoes, carrots, apples, bag of, little bags of chips, some candy, a box of instant mashed potatoes. And then had the students file past him, and he unloaded stuff, gave them to him. And then he had, I think he had him stand there. And whoever said thank you, I was put to that group, and whoever did not say thank you, left the back. And when everyone was done, that will work out. All the children got the people who gave them. But then the people in that group got candy bar, the people in that group didn't get candy bar. Because they hadn't said thank you. Okay, so there's times when we can teach a lesson like that. For a teacher to always do that, it gets a little monotonous. And they even require them to say thank you. Depending on your culture and your students, I don't know how hard you want to say it. Work on it. And you're going to have to decide. You should work on it harder. But I would probably require that if a mom brings in hot lunch, to say thank you to her. Because it's just polite to thank her for bringing the meal. Now what happens if they refuse? Any ideas? I have never had students refuse to say thank you. Oh, except one, but that was nothing to do with refusing to say it. Because she didn't talk, or hardly ever talk in public. So, what did I do when I give candy to all the ones that didn't say thank you? Well, she didn't say thank you, so I didn't care if I didn't do it too often, just because I knew that she didn't say thank you. And it could be a little awkward. You have to know your students, you have to know what you do, and what you should work on. And don't try to work on every single step of the way. I thought with a teacher who would take one thing, we can work. You say, this week we're going to work on this. Now everything they worked on in the past became a matter of discipline. But each new week, or maybe every other week, every 2 weeks, you start a new thing that we're going to work on the next 2 weeks. But then after those 2 weeks, it kind of became a behavior problem. You know, if I taught you to say thank you and you don't say it, then you're in a small punishment. And some of those aren't just social graces, some of those are things in the classroom, such as raising your hand, which can border on social graces too, because in the classroom, when you raise your hand, it's part of the social life, it's the thing that keeps school running smoothly. Thirdly, pleasantness, and this basically is an area that covers all of life. But I believe that pleasantness reflects the Lord Jesus. What kind of people ought we to be, even when we don't feel like it? How would you like to be looked at sarcastically when you walk up to a cashier and she just gives you, doesn't like you? What kind of cashier do you want to meet in the store? Teach students that they can start practicing those things. Because someday they're going to be the cashiers. Someday children will be the businessmen, and how should they act in public? We went to Staples the other day to make some copies for a trip, and we made some mistakes. We started a couple copy machines with a credit card, something that you should not be able to do at Staples with your phone. You should never be able to start one copy machine on the same credit card. Well, we did it, and it worked, but then the third machine malfunctioned. Well, we got a receipt for it. We were charged for it, so we went back and we asked the lady at the service desk. We had to go to the lady at the service desk and talk to her, the manager, and we asked her if she could look it up and see if we could charge any more, and could she take this one off, because we had actually tried another copy machine, and that one didn't work either. So we wanted to know if we were charged for this or any more than the receipts we had, and we knew the one we had got the copies for. while she was not a nice person to work with. She let us know that. That we should have never been able to do that. Well, of course, we weren't able to do that. We have already been told we shouldn't have done that. But it worked for us. How were we supposed to know if it worked for us, that we were supposed to do it? There wasn't a big sign there that said, don't use your credit card on more than one machine at one time. We were just asking her. She let us know that she shouldn't do this for us because she doesn't know whether we've got copies or not. You know, we've got 500 copies. How does she know we're not being dishonest? I understand that. But all she has to do is say that she won't refund us the money. She wouldn't say that. She's giving us all kinds of excuses and not acting like a very pleasant person to be around. Teach students to be pleasant. Because someday they'll be in the job place and you want pleasant people there. They do need to learn reserve as well as they work in the workforce, especially young ladies. They have to be somewhat reserved as cashiers of a store, but yet they should be friendly. Church members. They help to aid in worship. And these are things that can also apply to the devotional period at school. So what are some things that children ought to learn, students ought to learn about church or maybe even devotionals at school? What or manners should they have? There's a new gadget that just came out called a fidget spinner. Should students put a fidget spinner in devotionals? No, I'm going to solve this out. But I was told by one of the other teachers the last week of school last year that one of my students was kind of a fidget spinner during the morning devotional. Now, I was up front, he was sitting back row. I didn't see it. And then it was the last week of school, so I decided, you know what, I'm not going to address it. But a few days later, another boy in my classroom was sitting at lunch time and pulled him out of his pocket and his lunch was wonderful. And I just nicely told him that he didn't ask for that toy at school, so he's not allowed to play with it until he asked some permission. And he stepped away. But I knew the other boy that's sitting there had done this at the original time. But I decided they both were in the last day, they both heard it. If he would, if the other boy, if I would have caught him doing it later, I would have addressed it. But I decided, sometimes you need to decide when to speak and when not to speak. And if the boy playing would have asked me, I would have heard it each time, I probably would have said yes, but he put it in his pocket and never asked him that. Now, if I would have taught that school this year, I know that we would have had to do something about fidget spinners. Now, at the school where I'm now, fidget spinners is not a problem yet. It could have become one. What else about devotionals? Church manners. Anything else that we ought to teach them? Moreover, tell the speaker, we had a devotional leader. He actually was a minister, and he was standing up front, and he said, look, children, it is respectful for you to look at me. And he gave him a little lecture on paying attention, keep their eyes focused on the person up front. I was glad for it. You know, teachers can do a lot, but sometimes a dad in the school actually is very effective as well. Teach them to keep their eyes on the speaker, on the person up front. This is very important. I just started teaching a new school, and last year they had a tradition. They would sit around tables for devotional time. You know what it's like when you have three students on this side and three students on this side and two at the end facing this way? Guess who pays attention to the speaker? The ones at the end, not the ones along the side. Now, there's a few on the side that did, depending on their ages. Ninth grade boys do, even if they're sitting on the side, at least these, the ones that our school do. But first grader, my first grade son, the fourth grade girl, no. Fifth grade boys, last week, right before I left, I said, what? I told my coach there, I said, we are going to start having devotions upstairs in the church auditorium, and we're going to sit in rows facing front. Well, you could have set up chairs and face them. But we're not going to do this table, sitting around tables anymore, because it's just too hard. No, they're not actually being bad, but they're just not paying attention. There's something about when they're all facing forward, they're not looking at each other across the table, or looking at the wall behind the person across the table from them. They're facing the speaker, and it's easier to tell if they're paying attention. If they're not facing you, it's a little harder to tell if they're actually paying attention to you or not. Songbooks. Do we need to train children in holding songbooks? Maybe some of them get it automatically. My son, my second son in the first grade this year, he tells me it's because he's a first grader and he never was in school before. And I'm sure that some of it. Some of it, I think, would just be common sense. I didn't know what was on with him. I mean, he's been holding something at church when his dad makes him. Yeah, so we come to our first time in the school sitting together, and where's his songbook? On top of his head like this. And then we turn the page and he's kneel on the floor, flip the pages. I understand. He's just a first grader. What do you need to learn? Anything else? By the way, it's really hard to be principal of the school and the dad and older grade teacher and have a first grade son, so. You need to learn where you and then to not actually be the teacher of your son. And of course, you know, teachers are a little bit not sure when parents are around who is actually in charge. So I told my son's teacher, I said, when I'm busy, I said, I'm not afraid to be in charge of him. But I said, he is yours. You worry about him. Don't worry about me. I'm going to support you. If we're saying, I'm not going to stop reading the songs and take care of him. I said, you just take care of him. Because it is hard to say up front. In charge and take care of one person. There's lots of things we can talk about school. We're going to run out of time. Hospitality. Sportsmanship. Sportsmanship is very good to teach children. Teach them that it is okay to lose. Not to give up halfway through the game if they're losing, but to keep on going. Not to say, poor pity me, I can't do very good. Do their best. Also teach them, as they relate to others, to play fairly. But yet, if they're ninth graders and they're playing softball with first graders or fourth grade girls, perhaps, let the fourth grade girl make the first base. It doesn't hurt to throw the ball over her head so she gets the first base more often than she gets out. Because when ninth grade boys can actually get fourth grade girls out in some time on the way to first base. But teach them how to play fairly, yet give little students a chance. So teachers teach good hygiene. Sometimes they need to. Especially if, depending on the situation, we had a grandma in her 70s with teenage children. Do you think grandmas in the 70s always get things done? In teaching children, especially when they also have some other adopted handicapped children, it doesn't always work. Sometimes the teachers need to take those children aside and talk to them. Teach them that young men will become, or that boys will become men. Don't just stay on the same boys will be boys. Teach young women to be ladylike. They need to learn that. Teach them how to relate to strangers. There's a list of problems I can sort of hand out because people face there. C, overly casual speech at times, yet overly formal speech in other locations. How casual are speech at times? Now, this is not a result of me, but from what I got, it seems like mostly the same person. I think it's made up of. I'll say, hey guys, how about chilling down by the river for a spell? Then head on over to the old homestead and fry us up a big honking mess of catfish. And then later that person, as he prays, says, Thou, our Heavenly Father, we do beseech and request and bequeath to thee our supplications as we, having now gathered, draw us nigh into thy holy presence, and we praise thee, for thou hast slain the uncircumcised Philistine, which dwells in this dark and sinful world, southwest of Zion. Now be careful. We need to be careful with our speech. But we as Anabaptist people need to be not overly zealous on good speech when we pray. And that is important. But we need to be careful that we don't get too casual in our everyday language. There's a lot of causes there that work against teaching social graces. Such as the first mentality in our world today, the individualism of our culture, lack of moral absolutes in our culture, prejudice, a lack of guidance from adults, and ingratitude. You know, those all creep into our service. Even though we wish they wouldn't, they do. And we need to work against those. Know the teacher is not the only one to teach habits and social manners. But we have a good part to play in what children will remember when they're older, and what they have learned as they go through childhood and adolescence. So go forth and teach Christian character to children whose character must be molded to that of Christ's character, that they may grow as Jesus did in favor of both God and man. May God bless you.